this week's edition of New York Now, the state budget deadline has been extended, and we'll give you an update on where negotiations stand. Next, SUNY Chancellor John King joins us to discuss the importance of funding for public universities in the budget. And then congestion pricing has officially been approved in New York City. We'll sit down with Assemblymember Zoran Mandani to discuss his proposal to invest in bus infrastructure. I'm Chantel Destra, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
I will fight like hell for you every single day, like I've always done and always will.
Get another stand.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Chantel Destra. Amid ongoing budget negotiations, Governor Kathy Hochul officially signed a budget extender, pushing the deadline for leaders to come to an agreement to April 4th. The move came as political stakeholders waited at the Capitol this week to see if an agreement would be reached by the original April 1st deadline. State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins told reporters negotiations were in the middle of the middle. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie shared a similar sentiment while noting there was still a ways to go before a final agreement could be reached.
We're all in the same, you know, sometimes in the budget, you might be in a different galaxy. I think we're all now even on the same planet, I'd say, on where I think we need to go.
When asked about the conversations around housing, one of the most watched budget items, the state Senate Majority Leader told reporters that conversations were still ongoing while reiterating the legislature's position on the need for tenant protections.
The housing deal, as we've always indicated, must be holistic and must include tenant protections and aligned with the principles of good cause. So, and I do believe, again, we are all on the same planet. We're all working towards trying to get that grand plan that will not only address affordability, but address, you know, the needs of supply as well as the needs of tenant protections.
And amid budget negotiations, it was a busy time at the state capitol as advocates and lawmakers held rallies for issues they want addressed in the budget. Education leaders rallied for funding for public universities, colleges, and tuition assistance with higher education chairs Toby Enstavisky and Patricia Fahey.
We know with more increases this year, you can continue to turn it around. So as we look to these final days of the budget, it is imperative that we increase that funding again, SUNY, CUNY, the Capitol, the hospitals, and of course, turn on the tap, because we need to tell students we have their back.
And to learn more about how the state should approach higher education funding this year, we caught up with SUNY Chancellor John King. Thank you so much for being here today, Chancellor.
Excited to talk with you.
Now, of course, I wanted to start off with budget. We are expecting the final state budget, hopefully in the next few weeks. So I wanted to get your perspective on what you're hoping is secured in the final state budget. I know coming out of last year, SUNY was able to secure millions of dollars in operating funds that were recurring, as well as money for transformation initiatives. So how are you hoping the state will build on that investment from last year heading into the final weeks of the state budget this year?
Well, we're very grateful for last year's investment by the governor and the legislature in our students, and we hope that this year we'll be able to build on that investment. The governor proposed a $54 million increase in operating aid. That's a good start, and we're looking forward to conversations in the weeks ahead about how we best support our students. You know, last year's aid increase is allowing us to invest in mental health services, expanded supports for students with disabilities, expanding internships across our campuses with a goal that ultimately we want every SUNY student to have an internship experience during their undergraduate years. It's allowing us to grow our research across our campuses. So we're really looking to build on that. And then capital is critical. We've got to make sure that our academic buildings are up to date, that we're able to build the lab space that will help our campuses compete And whether it's in the training folks for the semiconductor industry or doing the research around climate change that we desperately need, or the lab space for health sciences. So we're looking forward to a robust conversation the next few weeks about how we continue to strengthen SUNY to be the best public higher education system in the country.
And from your purview, what does the long-term capital investment from the state for SUNY campuses look like to ensure sustainability?
Well, look, we've got a more than $7 billion capital backlog, critical maintenance that needs to be done on buildings across the state. And we've got 40% of the state's public buildings. So if we're going to be successful in the state's goal to get to net zero, to really move to renewable energy, SUNY's going to have to lead the way. So there's going to need to be sustained, significant year-over-year investment to make sure our facilities are up to date and that they're using renewable energy.
And I wanted to ask you about FAFSA, because I know last week you were a part of a roundtable discussion on the universal FAFSA application, which is essentially a bill that would mandate high school students to complete the FAFSA application in addition to the TAP application. So can you unpack why that is something that you're supporting and how it might impact students who are interested in attending SUNY schools but may not necessarily be interested in filling out a FAFSA application for whatever reason?
Absolutely. So the FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. It's really the gateway to accessing federal and state financial support to attend college. When people get financial aid, it makes college more affordable and more accessible. In fact, at SUNY, more than 52% of our students go tuition free because of the federal Pell Grant program and the state tuition assistance program, as well as the state's Excelsior program. So we want students to have that access. But that means they have to complete the form. This year, there's a new form. It's simpler, shorter. So we're hoping that families that have 12th graders or folks who are interested in going to college, working adults, will take this moment to go online, complete that FAFSA, and find out how much aid is available to them. The governor's proposal would ensure that high schools help high school students and their families complete either the FAFSA or the DREAM Act application if students are undocumented, or students can sign a waiver that says, you know, there's free money out there to go to college, but I don't want any of it. But we want to make sure that every student has that opportunity because we know attending college can translate into $1 million more in lifetime earnings. Attending college can be the linchpin to a successful path to the middle class.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you about TAP funding. So in addition to FAFSA, the education chairs, Patricia Fahey and Toby and Stavisky have also been calling for increased funding for TAP. So is that a measure that you support? And what are your conversations like with the education chairs for funding for SUNY this year?
Yeah, look, I so appreciate the leadership of Chair Fahey and Chair Stavisky. They're both so committed, not only to SUNY, but to public higher education more broadly. The conversation about TAP is a very important one. You know, the TAP income threshold, the maximum income level, is $80,000. It's been $80,000 since 2000. If that had gone up with inflation, it would be $145,000. And so you have a program that used to be available to a much larger swath of New Yorkers that has shrunk because we haven't moved up that income threshold. That's a very important conversation. The income threshold for independent students is $10,000. That hasn't changed since the 80s. We've got to change that. So I really appreciate the chairs leading on this conversation. You know, it's a complicated budget year. Resources are limited. There's lots of competing demands. But an investment in our students, in our young people, in our working adults who want to move ahead at work, that's an investment that will help the state's economy for the long term.
And one thing that I saw that was really, really big news is that enrollment for SUNY went up for the first time in a decade. From fall 2022 to fall 2023, there was a 1.1% increase. And I know that you had been pushing for increasing enrollment when you were first appointed to the role. So can you talk to me about the impact of this and, you know, the efforts that you and your team had been doing? I know there was some level of outreach that you've been doing to help with enrollment.
Look, we're really excited about the enrollment growth, first time in a decade, as you said, and particularly that our first time student enrollment is up over 4%. That's a very good sign for SUNY's long-term health across the system. Lots of efforts to recruit students. We want every New Yorker to know there's a place for them at SUNY. One of the things we did last year was we sent letters home to every New York student outside of New York City, letting them know there's a place for them at their local community college, a personalized letter, which said, you know, scan this QR code and start picking your program and your classes because you're already admitted to your local community college. We're also doing a lot of work to partner with high schools, community-based organizations, faith-based organizations to make sure that they're helping students understand the range of opportunities within SUNY. If you want a great engineering program, you've got University at Buffalo, Binghamton, SUNY Poly. If you're excited about climate change and environmental justice issues, we've got our Environmental Science and Forestry College in Syracuse. If you want opportunities to prepare for a career in the semiconductor industry, maybe you want a one-year certificate, Onondaga Community College has a great program for you that could lead to a job at Micron. We want students to know all those possibilities. If you love the arts, amazing programs at SUNY Purchase and SUNY Fredonia. So we're working to make sure that students know the great value proposition that SUNY offers, excellence at affordable prices.
So how will you build on those efforts to ensure that enrollment continues to trend upward?
Yeah, so we're very committed to that. One of the things we did this past fall is I worked with the New York City Schools Chancellor to send a letter home to every New York City student, letting them know the range of opportunities available to them at SUNY. We also have an initiative to increase transfers from our community colleges to our four-year institutions, making a smooth path for students. I was just at a recent announcement where UAlbany and Hudson Valley Community College are partnering in a dual admission program where students, right when they start at Hudson Valley Community College, will be able to know they're simultaneously admitted to UAlbany. They'll get a UAlbany ID. They'll get to participate in extracurricular activities at UAlbany. That's the kind of thing we want to do to make sure that we're clearing a path for student success.
And I wanted to, of course, touch base on SUNY Downstate. We know that that is the only state-run facility in New York City, and it has been facing a lot of financial difficulties, and there has been some conversation about diverting services to help with those issues. So, you know, how are you going to work with the legislature to come up with a solution that everyone is okay with and there's some level of compromise so everyone is happy?
Yeah, well, certainly conversations are ongoing. There's both a financial challenge that the hospital is running about $100 million a year deficit, and the hospital has significant capital needs. There really hasn't been investment over decades in that building. And so it's really approaching catastrophic failure. So we've got to take action now. The governor has put $500 million on the table, $200 million to cover the deficit for this year and next year. $300 million in capital investment to build a new outpatient facility. That's the starting point for conversation. We continue to talk with legislators, local leaders about the path forward. The key for us is protecting the Health Sciences University. Downstate Medical produces a supply of diverse doctors, nurses, other healthcare professionals who stay in New York. So we've got to protect that. And we want to expand healthcare services for the community, both inpatient and outpatient, because that preventative care is just so important, and we want to make sure we're delivering that.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for your time, Chancellor.
Thank you.
And we've been speaking with SUNY Chancellor John B. King, Jr. Thank you. And we'll continue to bring you updates on the progress of the state's budget right here on the show and online on our website. That's at nynow.org. Now turning to another topic. This week, the MTA board officially voted to approve the congestion pricing plan in New York City. The plan was first passed by the legislature about 5 years ago, but has faced hiccups and legal challenges. Now, drivers entering the city from Lower Manhattan will need to pay tolls. Supporters hope it will provide funding to the MTA and slow traffic. Ahead of the rollout in the coming months, Assemblymember Zaran Mandani, a Queens Democrat, introduced a proposal to make buses more reliable and expand the fare-free bus pilot program. We spoke with the Assemblymember about the cost of implementing the proposal and the path to getting it over the finish line. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us, Assemblymember.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I wanted to get into your plan for congestion pricing. Ahead of congestion pricing being rolled out in New York City, you, along with Senate Deputy Majority Leader Mike Gianaris, have introduced a proposal that would essentially allow the state to invest $90 million into the MTA's bus infrastructure. And it's my understanding that half of that money would go towards making the bus services more reliable, and then the other half would expand the free bus pilot program. So can you just give us some insight into how that plan has come together and what impact you're hoping it'll have?
Absolutely. So the first $45 million that we're talking about is $45 million to make our buses more frequent and more reliable. Because right now in my district in Astoria and Long Island City, as well as across New York City, you have bus riders who are waiting far too long at the bus stop for the next bus. And sometimes when they look at their app to see when the next bus is coming, they can't even trust that timer because sometimes the bus just disappears from their view entirely. And so what we're doing with that $45 million is we are making these buses run more frequently, and we're making it such that you can believe the time that you see when you're told that the bus will come to the bus stop. And that number of $45 million, it comes from conversations that we've had with the MTA as to how much money can you absorb immediately to transform the bus system's reliability and frequency. Because we don't want to just be fighting for an abstract number that we don't know if it can actually translate into New Yorkers' lives and experiences. We want a number that will see a difference from day one, and that's the 45 that we were given. And then on the fare free bus pilot, you know, last year in the state budget, we won a first of its kind fare free bus pilot across New York City. One free bus route in each borough. And those five routes that have been running since last September have seen an increase in ridership by up to 20%. And so what we're saying is, in this moment right now, where we are going to be charging New Yorkers more to drive in the Central Business District, we need to pair it with investments that make our bus system more frequent, more reliable, and more affordable, because that's what we're seeking to do, is to get more New Yorkers on public transit.
And in terms of the $45 million that will be used to help with the reliability of bus services, I understand that that derives from conversations that you've had with the MTA. Was there any level of independent research that was done to see if that number is the most accurate, or if potentially more or less could be used?
So, you know, when we had those conversations with them, they told us that that is around the max amount they could absorb. So the importance of that is, technically, you could invest as much money as you'd like into the bus system. The problem is, once you get past a certain threshold, you hit up against barriers. Barriers like the fact that Mayor Adams in New York City is not following the law when it comes to building out bus lanes. So if you invest too much money into the bus system without building out those bus lanes and preferential bus light treatment, then what you have is too many buses bunched up one after the other after the other. It's too often where you're waiting 30 minutes for a bus and then two come all at once. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is actually have the impact we're looking for, which is to make sure that you're not waiting that 30 minutes, and that if that is ever the case, you're not seeing all of these buses come at once.
And I wanted to ask about the three buses per borough. So what metrics were used to determine that that was the sweet spot in terms of free buses for each borough?
So the ultimate vision is to make all buses free, because we know that free buses means a commute that is safer, that is faster, and that is more accessible. We've seen that in Kansas City, we've seen it in Connecticut, we've seen it in multiple municipalities across the country. It's time that New Yorkers receive those same benefits from a program such as this. The idea of going from one per borough to three per borough is of a gradual expansion. We've already seen in the early results that this is bearing out what our hopes were, which is more New Yorkers on these buses. Now it's time to continue to build that up and ensure that we go from the 45,000 riders that are currently on these free buses to a larger amount to see, is this scalable in the way that we believe? And we think that three per borough, 15 in total across the city, is a good beginning step.
And do you have any idea of how much it would cost to expand it even further to more than three buses per borough?
So the total cost of all making all buses free is somewhere around $700 million a year, which may sound like a substantial amount of money, but when you put it in the context of a $327 billion annual state budget, mm-hmm. it actually isn't that expensive in terms of what it could deliver to New Yorkers across the board. Because we know that if the bus is free, you're not standing in line looking for your MetroCard. Every single door is open for you to get on and get off. And so often, when the bus is free, you see ridership increase. And I've heard from so many constituents that they feel much safer when they're not the only one on that bus, mm-hmm. when they're actually in a bus that is well populated, that is getting New Yorkers to where they need to go.
And what have you heard from your constituents about how the free bus program has impacted not only their lives, but also their pockets?
So, you know, my constituents are desperate to have a free bus in their district. So far, the free buses we've seen haven't overlapped with my district, but they're very excited about the prospect of that becoming their reality. Because when I've ridden on the free buses, whether it be on Staten Island or it be in the Bronx, I hear from people about the fact that this is one less thing they now have to worry about. They can get on the bus and that $2.90 they used to have to find, they can put it towards the cost of eggs. They can put it towards the cost of Con Ed. They can put it towards the skyrocketing cost of living across their entire life. And this is one place where we are finally delivering working class people the relief that they deserve.
And what about the long-term sustainability of the MTA? We know that, unfortunately, the authority has been battling a lot of financial issues. So in terms of next year's budget or budgets to come in future years, what would that investment look like to make the MTA the most sustainable?
I think we took a giant step forward last year when we resolved the MTA's fiscal deficit and when we made investments into subway service as well as this free bus pilot. But I think more and more what we need to do is show the MTA that it can depend on Albany to fund it as the public good that it is. In years past, and especially with governors past, we have treated the MTA like an ATM, where the MTA's finances have been used to shore up things like upstate ski resorts. Mm-hmm. What is critical is we understand the MTA the way we understand schools, the way we understand sanitation, libraries. Public transit is a public good, and it should be there for every single New Yorker to get them where they want to go. And too often, the MTA has had to depend on revenue off of the backs of working class riders instead of depending on Albany. And what we're saying now is this is a moment for us to start to expand how many New Yorkers can use this public good. And we're going to do it in a way that everything that we ask for, we fund it through the state budget.
And apart from buses, of course, trains in New York City are a really big form of transportation. So is there any thinking that you would like to address the issues of reliability and safeties on the subway?
Absolutely. I think that is an annual battle that we have. You know, last year, our campaign was titled Fix the MTA. Mm-hmm. It continues to be our rallying cry because for so many of my constituents, they are standing on the platform and they are waiting for trains that are supposed to be coming much more frequently than they actually do. And part of this is the revenue that we will get from congestion pricing. It will deliver investments into signaling that will ensure for more frequent and reliable train service. But we do need to understand that this is a priority for New Yorkers across the board because this is how they get to work. This is how they see their friends. This is how they go to church. This is how they live their lives. And for too long, we've been giving them a public transit system that is not befitting the world-class nature of our city.
You know, the buses and the trains are a part of the makeup of New York City, but why is this an issue that New Yorkers across the state should be caring about and hoping that the state provides funding for in the budget?
So, you know, the MTA is the lifeblood of New York City and New York City's economy. And New York City's economy is the lifeblood of the state economy. So if we do not fund the MTA in an adequate way, if we do not make the right investments to get more and more New Yorkers on the MTA, then we will see a set of consequences that reach to every single aspect of the state and the way in which we can fund day-to-day life across the state. So we need to take it seriously. And I think that right now we're on the precipice of implementing a first-of-its-kind program in the country with congestion pricing. We need to follow the evidence-based approach that we've seen succeed in cities like London, cities like Stockholm, where in London, for example, before they implemented congestion pricing, they increased bus service by 17%. And they saw the amount of riders in their central business district went up by 30%. These are things that are to be paired. And now we need to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And at the time that we're filming this, of course, the governor and legislative leaders are in the thick of budget negotiations. So what are your conversations like with Assembly Speaker Carl Hasty to get this in the final enacted budget?
You know, we wouldn't have even gotten to this point if it wasn't for the leadership and support of Speaker Carl Hasty. He was a pivotal voice in us winning these pilot programs in last year's state budget. And he has continued to support this, which you can see by the fact that the $90 million proposal that we've pushed for is in the Assembly's budget proposal. It's also in the Senate budget proposal. And so now we are looking to see if the governor will include this in part of a framework for the final budget. And we're very thankful for the fact that our coalition has been growing week by week, where we're seeing borough presidents in Brooklyn and in Manhattan come out in support of this proposal. We're seeing congresspeople like Congressmember Dan Goldman write an op-ed with those borough presidents in support of this proposal. We're seeing this be something that is the rallying cry of New Yorkers across the political spectrum.
Well, we'll have to see if it makes it into the final state budget, and we'll have to check in with you and get those updates. So thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we were speaking with Assemblymember Zoran Mamdani. The proposal would cost the state $90 million, which the Assemblymember says is a drop in the bucket when compared to the total state budget. For more information on the congestion pricing plan and its implementation in New York City, you can visit our website. Again, that's at nynow.org. Well, that does it for this episode of New York Now. Thank you for tuning in, and see you next week.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.